Jeremiah, this is God speaking. I need you.
God, what do you possibly need from me? I'm just a kid, just a boy, really.
Don't you tell me that you're just a kid. Age doesn't matter to me. I need people of all ages, sizes, colors, and languages to do my work in the world.
Okay. What do you need me to do?
I want you to go tell the people that they have made me very angry. If they don't change their ways, I'm going to punish them. I'll allow invading armies to come. They will be sent into exile in faraway lands.
I'm not sure that message is going to go over very well. It's kind of harsh, you know?
Oh, okay. Then after you tell them all that, you can also tell them that if they amend their ways, I will deliver them from their enemies.
Can't I just tell them that part and skip the parts about invasion, conquering, and exile?
No.
All right, I'll tell them.
They won't listen.
They won't? Are you kidding me? You know what they say, don't shoot the messenger. What if they shoot the messenger?
Yeah, some of them will be pretty angry at you.
You're not selling this very well, God. This just keeps getting worse and worse.
They will think you're crazy or depressed or just plain mad.
And how long will I be preaching your wise words of woe?
Oh, 40 years or so.
40? Are you kidding me?
I didn't say it would be easy or fun. But I need you, and I've chosen you for this task, and I know you can do it.
Okay, when do we begin?
Well, how about now?
Wow, you really don't pull any punches, do you?
That's my boy.
Right, I told you I was only a boy.
But you're my boy.
Yeah, don't push your luck.
I knew I could count on you.
It was a cool November morning at Roosevelt Elementary School in Spokane. My friends and I had just gotten off the school bus and were hanging around by the east entrance waiting for the bell to ring so we could go inside and start the school day. Suddenly, we heard a tap, tap, tap on the window, and there stood Mrs. Ivanoff, my second grade teacher, pointing at me and telling me with that finger action that struck the heart of fear into every elementary child to come inside immediately. My friends started teasing me, "Danny's in trouble, Danny's in trouble," and I went trembling down the stairs into our classroom. Mrs. Ivanoff proceeded to sit me down and tell me that she has chosen me to be the narrator for the second grade Christmas play. Now, you all may find this really surprising, but back then I was not the outgoing person that I am now, and I told her that I didn't want to do it and I wasn't going to do it. Case closed. She said that I was perfect for the role and that, yes, I would be doing it. We rehearsed and rehearsed, and the big night soon arrived. Neither of my parents drove, so Mrs. Ivanoff agreed to come pick us up and bring us to the school. Well, I got so nervous when she pulled up that I threw up as we were getting ready to get into the Jeep, and I started crying and saying, "I can't do this," and trying to run away from my mother, and Mrs. Ivanoff said, "Nonsense, you can do this, you're going to do this," and got me cleaned up with my mom and packed us up into the Jeep, and away we went to school. The show must go on, and I did survive the evening. So how many of us get butterflies in our stomach when our parents, our teachers, or our bosses ask us to do something, especially when it's something that pushes us out of our comfort zone? How many times do we get nervous when our spouse or significant other says, "Honey, we should do blank," and it's a project or a trip or something that we would rather not do? Suddenly, organizing the spice cabinet in the kitchen or rearranging the tools in the garage looks a lot more inviting than that thing, that idea that keeps nagging at us. Admit it, we are creatures of habit and comfort. And sometimes it gets a bulldozer to get us moving in the direction we should be going. Sometimes that bulldozer is a person or event, and sometimes it's God. Today's passage and skit introduced us to the prophet Jeremiah in his call to ministry. He's a member of a priestly family that was displaced years earlier by Solomon. If you remember when I preached about Solomon last month, toward the end of Solomon's life, I had said it seemed as if the wisdom he had been given by God had flown out the window. One of Solomon's actions that I didn't mention last time was that he exiled the priestly families who didn't toe the party line when it came to the indulgences made to make the nation of Israel the military wonder it ended up being at the time. Jeremiah came from a family that stood up to Solomon and reminded him that he needed to rely more on God and less on his army. His family lineage was used to calling the nation of Israel back to God. With this lineage, it seemed like Jeremiah's call to ministry was a call to make public what he already felt in his heart. So as we saw in the skit, God calls out Jeremiah and tells Jeremiah before he was born, God already had Jeremiah in mind for this special vocation to be God's prophet before God formed him in his mother's womb. And in verse 8, God ensured the prophet of God's enduring presence, a promise that is wonderfully illustrated in the next verse when he touches the lips of Jeremiah. So Jeremiah, God is handing this to you on a silver platter. You got the call. This is a no-brainer. But what does Jeremiah do? He does the great dance step I call the avoidance two-step. You want me to do what? Seriously? I'm just a young boy. I don't know how to speak. Sound familiar to you? It should. Our friend Moses said something very similar about his inability to speak. Look how far that got him. It's something we hear time and time again. The prophet Isaiah also said the same thing when God called him. In this business about being too young, Jacob, Joseph, Miriam, Gideon, Joshua, Samuel, David, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, Mary, Jairus' daughter, Timothy, and Jesus at age 12 were all young when they too encountered the divine. God isn't going to let Jeremiah's youth stand in the way of sending a message that people of Israel need to hear, even if they don't want to hear it. Reluctantly, Jeremiah says yes to God's call. And honestly, Jeremiah has good reason to be reluctant about saying yes, because much like Moses, he's got a rough road ahead of him. As the book unfolds, it is apparent that Jeremiah is called to deliver a message that is both difficult and most unwelcome. The declaration that God knew him before he was born does not exempt Jeremiah from problems inherent in the call. Neither the command not to be afraid nor the promise of God's presence is enough to shield Jeremiah from the trouble that will await him. Anticipating the difficulty may have been part of the reason why Jeremiah objected to God's summons. His time of service as prophet covers the reign of three kings. Josiah, who at first turns out to be a really good king, he gets a system of reform instituted, gets the nation back on track, gets rid of those shrines and those high places that tend to cause trouble. But then those reforms don't last long. And Josiah, in fact, gets involved with the political storm that is swirling around Judah at that time in Egypt and Assyria and gets assassinated. The next king, Jehoiakim, taxed the people heavily to pay the tribute to Egypt. Really didn't care about the reforms or the covenant or anything like that. And then he switches his allegiance to Babylon from Egypt and then rebels against Babylon. And then he either dies or assassinated. They're not sure which. And then there's the third king, Zedekiah, who's weak on one hand and stubborn on the other, and whose eyes are put out as he's dragged into captivity at the end of his reign. In the temple sermon, which is the other part of the passage we didn't get to today, Jeremiah is faced with an awful reality. that the temple in the city is not as invincible as evident in the devastating attacks from Babylon. Three times they invade Jerusalem and in 587 destroy the temple. He calls out the people in that sermon for their false worship practices, for saying on one hand that they worshiped God and followed the temple guidelines like they're supposed to while they were practicing injustice, not taking care of the widow, the orphans, the aliens, and not dealing justly with their brothers and sisters. And then, of course, add to the rap sheet the fact that they had gone back to worshiping other gods in the high places outside the temple. God wasn't enough for them, and God had had enough. Jeremiah is called the weeping prophet for a reason, because he will see the destruction of the temple of Judah and the people carried into captivity. Frankly, if I was Jeremiah, I would have said no too. But in the midst of the turmoil, and by the end of the book, it's obvious that despite his misgivings about his call, Jeremiah's faith was big enough and bold enough to embrace the whole tragic sense of human history and to see that God had been fully involved in it. His faith was big enough for the difficult, complex task to which God called him. And then on Friday night after I hit save, I hit the brick wall of my sermon and couldn't figure out how to end it and said, no, wait till tomorrow. And so yesterday I went down and was in a friend's ordination, and I find that in these times where my mind and my heart are not here, I process a lot when I'm driving. And in the midst of thinking about the sermon and thinking about this passage and thinking about so many times where we are called to do things that we don't want to do, a different thought came to mind. Because once we are done with this service, we're going to go out and we're going to eat some Thanksgiving food. And this week, we're going to gather with friends and family and celebrate. And we're going to think about those things that we are thankful for. And I want to leave you with this question today as we think about this passage. We've said time and time again that God calls imperfect people to do God's work, and that God gives us the tools we need to do that work. But as we head into this Thanksgiving week and we think about all the things that we are thankful for, have we ever stopped to think about those things that, those events, those invitations that God tapped us on the shoulder on, or gave us the elbow on, or in my case, slapped me upside the head with the proverbial 2x4 to get me to go into ministry? Do we ever say thank you to God for the call, for those invitations to build and fix a fence in Detroit, those invitations to make sandwiches at the Dignity Center, or those invitations where we don't see the end result, like when we hand a bag of grace to someone as we're driving by? I'm going to leave you with that question this morning as we head into Thanksgiving. Amen. And now this is the time in the service.